let's take a minute and generate our motivation. And really feeling the preciousness of having access to the Dharma teachings and how rare this opportunity is to meet the Dharma, to have all of our senses intact, to be interested, to have the time, and so forth. And then thinking, too, about how precious the Dharma is, how it has the possibility of freeing us from cyclic existence and making our lives very meaningful by generating the bodhicitta and progressing on the path to full enlightenment. And so let's make a very strong determination to use this opportunity wisely without frittering it away, and to use it for the benefit of sentient beings, so that by learning and studying the Dharma, integrating it in our own lives, then we can repay the kindness of other sentient beings by gaining realizations and then leading them to gain those same realizations that lead to the ultimate freedom, the ultimate peace. So let's make that our intention for listening this evening. Which is a basic Buddhist practice by everybody, no matter whether they're hearers and solitary realizers aiming for liberation, or bodhisattvas aiming for full enlightenment, or those of us who don't know what we are, but we're attracted to the Dharma somehow. So these are very basic practice that everybody does. So it's learning to establish our mindfulness on four basic objects: our body, our feelings of pleasure, pain, and neutral, our mind, and then phenomena in general. So until now we've talked about establishing mindfulness on the body and really seeing what the body is, and that the body is not as gorgeous as our deluded thought thinks it is. Because we've done the meditations, seeing the body as the cause of the corpse and what our body's going to look like when it's a corpse. Last week we did the meditation dissolving all the flesh and skin and organs and seeing our body as a skeleton, bones filling all of space. Have you been doing that this week, meditation? Yeah? Interesting, isn't it? Do you like it? There's something very nice about it, isn't there? Do you feel really clean when you're somehow a skeleton? And then when all the flesh and organs come back, it seems rather bleh. So we've been doing that. Also, in the sutra on the four foundations of mindfulness, in the Pali Canon, and similar passages which appear in the sutra on the 10 levels in the Mahayana Canon, the Tibetan Canon, then there's also, when they talk about mindfulness on the body, that's where breathing meditation comes in, establishing mindfulness on the breath. There's also mindfulness on the 32 parts of the body. Okay, looking at our skin and teeth and hair and internal organs and seeing what this body is that we're so attached to. And they also have the charnel ground meditations, similar to what we've gone through. So I won't go into detail about those other ones that we haven't covered right now, but you know, we'll talk about them a little bit later. Then last week we started on the second of the observed objects, establishing mindfulness on our feelings. And here feeling has a very particular meaning. It doesn't mean emotion or like hurt feelings or things like that, as we usually speak of feelings in English, but rather it refers to pleasant feelings or happy feelings, okay, painful feelings or suffering feelings, and then neutral feelings that are neither pleasant nor painful. So just to those three, when we say feelings, we're not saying, you know, like emotions, I feel angry or something like that. We're talking just about this raw feeling of pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, or happy, painful, neutral. Okay? So these feelings really run our lives. We're quite usually quite oblivious to it. But these feelings run our lives because we're very reactive to our feelings. When we experience pleasure, we want more and better. And so attachment arises like this. When we experience even the slightest painful feeling, we don't like it. You know, aversion, hatred, repulse, you know, arises. And we act on that. When we feel neutral feelings, we kind of space out. Yeah. And we don't aim for neutral feelings, don't get us interested in being free of cyclic existence. We're just kind of there. Okay. So feelings are you know, quite important to be mindful of because of the way we react to those feelings. Okay. So let's talk a little bit more about our feelings. Okay. So sometimes you may have heard about the three types of dukkha. Sometimes it's translated as the three types of suffering, but that's not a very good translation. I prefer the Sanskrit Pali word dukkha, which means like unsatisfactory, not quite cutting it, okay? So these three feelings correspond to three kinds of dukkha. You may have heard it in other teachings. We talk about the dukkha of pain or of suffering, the unsatisfactoriness of pain or suffering, the dukkha or unsatisfactoriness of change, and then the third one is pervasive conditioned unsatisfactoriness. That's why I say dukkha, because unsatisfactoriness makes my spell checker go bonkers. Okay? Dukkha, it's learning to handle, but unsatisfactoriness, it can. Okay? So these are three kinds of dukkha that when we are beings in cyclic existence, we are constantly subject to. And they're correlated with these three feelings. So the dukkha or unsatisfactoriness of pain is correlated with painful or suffering feelings. And all sentient beings dislike this, these, okay? So there's physical pain, there's mental pain. If you're a living being, you don't like them, okay? It doesn't matter whether you're a kitty cat, whether you're a bug, whether you're the president, whether you're in the God realm, or the hell realm, all beings dislike pain. We can agree on that. There is nothing especially astute about renouncing pain. Okay? And this is why I don't like to translate dukkha as suffering, because we then begin to think that the noble truth of suffering is only about pain. It's not. It's about all three of these types of dukkha. Renouncing pain, you don't even have to be a human being or a Dharma practitioner. Nobody likes it. Okay? Now, the second one, the dukkha of change. This one's a little bit trickier, okay? The dukkha of change is correlated with pleasant feelings. And here we're talking about pleasant or happy feelings that occur within cyclic existence. Okay, in other words, pleasant, happy feelings that are still under the influence of afflictions and karma. Okay, so they're called polluted or sometimes contaminated. Yeah. So these are what we normally call happiness and what we're looking for all day long. Now, it's called the unsatisfactoriness of change. And it's correlated with these happy feelings. Well, why is happiness unsatisfactory? You know, we like it. The bigger, the better. We like it. We want it. What's unsatisfactory about it? Well, let's take a small example. This is one that we can really resonate with. When you're sitting, okay, at first you feel comfortable sitting. But as you sit longer and longer, what happens? You know, you're restless, you're fidgety, your knees hurt, your back hurt, you know, everything hurts. All you want to do is stand up. You're waiting for the Dharma teacher to be quiet so that you can have the pleasant feeling that comes from standing up. Forget the Dharma, forget enlightenment. I want the happiness of standing up. Okay? Because my knees hurt, my back hurts. So finally the Dharma teacher stops. They leave. We stand up. Our initial feeling when we stand up is pleasurable, isn't it? Not sitting anymore. But as you keep on standing, what happens? Eventually, standing becomes difficult. It becomes quite unpleasant. Your back starts to hurt again, but in a different way. And your feet hurt, but in a different way. And you're tired of standing, and all you want to do is sit down. So you sit down again. And now sitting down is pleasurable. But again, after a few hours, you're miserable. Sitting is painful. You want to stand up again. Okay. Now what's going on here? Now it seems like we're vacillating back and forth between pain and happiness, pain and happiness. Now how is it that sitting is both painful and pleasant? And standing is both painful and pleasant, because those are two opposite feelings. Okay? So what's actually happening when we're sitting down and we first stand up is the big pain of sitting down has decreased, and the small pain of standing up is very small. As you stand more and more, the pain of standing gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So when it's small, we label that painful feeling pleasurable or happiness. But at a certain point, we start labeling it painful and we don't want it anymore. Then when we sit down, this big pain of standing goes down, and the pain of sitting is still small, and because it's small, we call sitting pleasurable. But as we sit, that feeling becomes more and more painful. So what we call happiness or pleasant feeling in cyclic existence is actually just an unpleasant suffering feeling when it's still small. Okay. Now, we don't like to hear this. Yeah, because we are looking for real absolute happiness from our sense pleasure objects. We don't like to hear that the pleasure we get from something is actually just a small degree of pain. We want to think of it as real, true happiness. But if it were real, true happiness, by now we would have been really and truly forever happy. Because we've had so many sense pleasures, haven't we? Okay. But we're still back at, you know, seeking happiness, not liking unhappiness. We really haven't changed much from that basic scenario, despite all the pleasure we've experienced. Because all that pleasure is just a small degree of pain, and it goes away very quickly. Okay? So it's called the dukkha of change. It very quickly changes into an unpleasant or suffering feeling. Okay? So if you look at it, think of the things that you've worked so hard to get, that you've really wanted. Okay? You really want this new car. Yeah? Or you really want this romantic something something, you know? And when you get your car, you get your romantic partner, happiness, right? And it seems like this happiness is going to last forever. At least that's what all the advertising and love songs tell you. And we are so foolish that we believe in this propaganda. My car is going to make me happy forever. My love affair is going to make me happy forever. Okay? But having the car at the beginning, that pleasure, is just a small degree of pain. Because what happens as you have the car longer and longer? It breaks. It gets dented. Your new car becomes last year's model. And then 2 years ago model. And 10 years ago model. And your friends have nicer cars and better cars. And your car's just kind of chugging along, costing you a lot of money to keep on fixing. So here's this thing that you thought was going to bring you everlasting happiness that now has become quite dissatisfactory. So then we start craving a new car, thinking that new car will solve all of our problems. And the same happens in romantic relationship. You know, you fall in love. You know, we've all fallen in love. It's wonderful. And then what happens? Then you start getting to know the person, and you know, they have some habits that really aren't so nice, don't they? Yeah, they get angry, they fart, yeah, they smell, they don't pick up their clothes, they insult you sometimes. And this thing, this relationship you thought, which was going to be, you know, the ultimate thing, because that's what our advertising industry is telling us, you know, sex is the ultimate thing, becomes rather difficult. Yeah. And you get kind of tired of this person. They're really a nutnik. Well, you don't know what that means, do you? They're really a pain in the tush. Yeah? They don't do what you want them to do. And they do what you don't want them to do. And, you know, all the happiness you got from them has kind of, you know, gone away. Isn't that what happens? So, you get divorced, you go to the marriage counselor, whatever, go to the new husband-wife's shop. The That's what is called entertainment. You know, you go out to the bar, to the movies, to square dancing, to wherever you want to go to meet somebody who has your same interests. That becomes the new husband-wife shop. And, you know, and then you go through the whole thing again. I mean, I'm simplifying, but it's kind of basically the sequence, isn't it? Yeah? So, you know, it's very interesting to think about this when our mind is in the state of really clinging and longing and wanting, you know, because our mind is so much exaggerating. If I only had this, then I'd be really satisfied. To actually, at that point, remind ourselves, you know, that happiness is still polluted happiness. So under the influence of afflictions and karma, it's not going to make me everlastingly happy. Yeah. Do you know anybody who's everlastingly happy aside from people who have realized emptiness? Yeah? Any of your friends everlasting happiness? What about your parents? Yeah. What about the people you're jealous of? Are they everlastingly happy? They all have problems, don't they? Okay? So to remember this helps us lessen this craving for the pleasant feelings. So, ordinary people renounce the first kind, the unpleasant feelings, the dukkha of suffering. Spiritual practitioners of whatever brand, whatever variety, renounce the dukkha of change, okay, worldly pleasurable feelings. And that's why you find in most spiritual traditions, you know, the ideas of living simply, not accumulating a lot of wealth. Many spiritual traditions have celibate monastics, you know, but there's always some kind of idea of sensual restraint in all religions, isn't there? Some idea that, you know, this pleasant feelings are still by nature unsatisfactory. So that's universal for spiritual practitioners. Now, the third kind of dukkha is called pervasive conditioned dukkha. So it's pervasive because it goes through all the realms of cyclic existence. Okay? And it's conditioned because it's dependent on causes and conditions that are under the influence of afflictions. And it's dukkha because it's unsatisfactory. So these are correlated with neutral feelings. So I think last week we talked about we have some neutral feelings as a human being, but when you develop strong states of concentration, at the beginning you get very blissful feelings. But after a while, there's a certain edge to the blissful feelings, and you start looking for neutral feelings as being better than the rapturous feelings. So you abandon the pleasant feelings from deep states of concentration to go into deeper states of concentration where there's equanimity or neutral feelings, and then get very attached to that, stay in those deep states of concentration, these God realms, you know, like the formless realm that came up in today's teaching. And you can stay meditating in those deep concentrations for eons. Yeah. But, and you have that neutral feeling that you're spaced out with, but at the end, the karma that caused you to be born there is exhausted. And having gone up in samsara, the only way to go now is down. Okay. And you get born again in a lower realm. So, even though you've enjoyed those neutral feelings for a long time, they haven't brought permanent satisfaction, okay? Because all it requires is the exhaustion of the karma or a change of condition somehow. And those neutral feelings very easily become painful feelings. Okay, we can see this right now. How's your little toe? Are you aware of your little toe? Most of us aren't usually aware of our little toes. Okay? Is there kind of a neutral feeling in your little toe? You're not paying much attention to it? Okay? Now, what would happen if you, you know, went outside and slipped in the snow and twisted your little toe? Or you stepped on a thorn? Or you dropped something on your little toe? Okay? So that neutral feeling you have in your little toe right now, slight change of condition without warning, and bang, it goes into pain. Okay? So there's nothing satisfactory about these neutral feelings either. Okay? So you see these three feelings and the three kinds of dukkha? Buddhists are the ones who renounce the pervasive conditioned dukkha. Okay? Seeing that even these neutral feelings are unsatisfactory, and therefore we seek liberation from cyclic existence. Some meditators in other spiritual traditions, they can gain these deep states of concentration. Generating serenity and samadhi and so forth is not a uniquely Buddhist practice. Other spiritual practitioners can gain that. And they can wind up in their next life being reborn in these very, you know, high, deep states of concentration in the formless realms. But then afterwards they fall down because they don't have the wisdom that penetrates into the nature of reality. So, you know, when we're a Buddhist practitioner, we try to see that this pervasive conditioned dukkha, these neutral feelings, are also completely unsatisfactory. We renounce them, and instead we're seeking the bliss of liberation, the bliss of enlightenment. Okay. Now you might say, well, there we're experiencing bliss again, so isn't that going to be the dukkha of change? No. Because the bliss of liberation is not under the influence of ignorance, afflictions, and polluted karma. It's free of those. So that's why liberation, a synonym for liberation, is peace, the ultimate peace. Okay? Ultimate satisfaction. Okay. So, when we're doing the establishment of mindfulness on feelings, we start to be aware of our feelings in the past, the present, and the future. So we can look at our present feelings, because feelings are in the nature of experience, so we can be aware of what we're experiencing, pleasant, painful, neutral feelings right now. We can also remember our feelings in the past when we experience pleasure, pain, and neutral feelings. And then we also examine our hope for, hopefully, pleasant or neutral feelings in the future and not for painful ones. Okay? So we're looking at our feelings in the three times. Yeah? And we can do this while we're walking around during the day. We can also do it in our meditation session. Sit there and be aware of the feelings that arise in your body and in your mind. Okay, so this is being mindful of present feelings. Okay, and it's interesting to, you know, in our awareness, to become quite aware of what is a physical feeling and what is a mental feeling. Because we often conflate them and get them quite mixed up. Okay? Because our knee starts to hurt, that's a physical, painful feeling. But then our mind starts to worry about our knee. I'm sitting here with my knee in this position, it's hurting again. certainly some tendon, ligament, something is getting twisted out of shape. When I stand up, it's never going to go back to normal. I am going to be permanently crippled. You know, I have to shift positions right now. This just hurts too much. I can't stand it. And there becomes a lot of mental talk that takes us into mental suffering feeling. And usually when we get stuck in the mental talk, we're not really still experiencing the physical suffering, because we're too involved with our mental suffering and the worry and the anxiety and the stress. And this is what people suffer from so much nowadays. And it comes, it's a mental suffering that comes because of self-talk, the kind of stories that we make up, either about previous physical feelings or previous mental feelings. Mm-hmm. Or you might be sitting in meditation and, you know, you have a pleasant feeling. You know, your stomach is full, you just ate. You go, oh, that feels good, my tummy's full. Okay, and then you watch that pleasant feeling and then see what your mind does with that pleasant feeling. Oh, I like, you know, having my stomach full. And at lunch, what is it that made my stomach full? Oh, I had curry, I had lasagna, I had apple cobbler, I had chocolate cake. I want more of those objects, you know, kind of after this meditation session. Let's go get some more of that, because then I'll have some more of that pleasant feeling from eating it when I ate it, and the pleasant feeling of being full. So there we're back in the pleasant feelings of the past, remembering them, pleasant physical feelings. Okay, we're developing some kind of present mental pleasant feeling in our daydream, and we're developing the hope or expectation of a future pleasant physical feeling. Okay. Are we living in the here and now? No, we are in la-la land. Okay, total la-la land. So it's very interesting to sit and really watch the feelings. Try and see what the present feelings are. And then see how easily we go into, you know, remembering past feelings and then how they generate craving and clinging, and then projecting that into the future and wanting more and better of it in the future. You know, and watch how the slightest painful physical feeling triggers so much mental pain because of the talk that leads to worry and anxiety and stress. You know, so many people suffer from worry and anxiety and stress nowadays, don't they? Yeah, there's not a good Buddhist word for anxiety, or really for stress or for worry. I'm sure there is somewhere, because there's 84,000 afflictions. But at least in the major ones we study, we don't come upon those. Okay, but we sure feel them a lot, don't we? And they're with very painful mental feelings right now. But what caused that painful mental feeling? It's due to how we're thinking. Yeah. We usually don't realize that. We usually think that the painful feeling of anxiety comes from a truly existent external situation, and that external situation is causing my pain. But it's not. Because if it were an objective external situation, everybody living in it would experience pain. But some people living in it experience pleasure. Yeah. We see this at the Abbey all the time. Okay? You know, we're living in the same environment, And one person will say, I can't stand it any longer, you know, and they want to run down the hill. And other people are saying, oh, I'm so happy here. And it's the same environment. But we think we're experiencing an objective environment that has nothing to do with our mind. And we don't realize how we're interpreting things in the environment that then lead us to experience mental pain or mental pleasure. And we also see it happens all the time at the Abbey. Somebody could be in a really bad mood, but all of a sudden they start practicing, and the way they're looking at a situation changes, and all of a sudden they're still living in the same situation, but now they feel happy and they're cheerful again, and nothing external has changed. You know, I mean, of course everything's changing moment by moment, but not radically. So when we do retreat, you know, we're going to be starting our 3-month retreat next week. This is one of the things that we see so clearly when we're doing retreat. Because your daily schedule's the same. The people you stay with are the same. The food, well, you know, depending upon who's cooking, each cook has their own favorite dish. So every Wednesday, it's the same. You know, you get to know everybody's cooking. So you know, oh, so-and-so's cooking today. I can expect this for lunch. yeah. So that's pretty much the same. The weather is pretty much the same. Yeah. And yet you see when you're in retreat, your moods and your feelings vacillate like this. You know, total yo-yo. And they change like that. And your mind is always thinking, it's changed because of what's happening on the outside. You know, today, you know, I'm in such a bad mood because the potatoes are burnt. Come on, you know, it's not really because of that. But, you know, the mind is making up stories that create happiness, that create pain. Yeah. And you begin to see in your meditation sessions when you remember things from the past and the different feelings that come up when you have those memories and how that influences your present mood. Because you might go into a meditation session grumpy and come out happy, depending on what you were thinking about, what you were meditating on. Or you might go in a good mood and come out upset. Again, because you got distracted. Okay? So you see this so clearly in, when you're doing retreat and how changeable the feelings are, how we always think they're coming from outside, but how they're really coming from how we interpret things, how we react to things. Just about this comment I made that when you get distracted, you come out of your session with painful feelings. There was a New York Times article about this. I put it downstairs last week, that some researchers did something. And when people are concentrated on a task, even if they don't like the task very much, they're happier than when they're doing the task and they're distracted. Isn't that interesting? Yeah, that just the thing of getting distracted, of the mind being scattered and restless, that itself brings unpleasant feelings. Whereas when you're focused on doing something, you know, even if it's shoveling snow, if you're really there focused on it, your mind can be peaceful. Yeah, quite interesting. Yeah. So scientists are catching on, you know. They're doing some good research, and we can discover it in our meditation, too. Okay. So the most of the three kinds of dukkha, or the three kinds of feelings, the most difficult to renounce is the neutral feelings, the pervading conditioned feelings. Okay? Those are much more difficult to renounce. And like I said, you really have to have a Buddhist perspective for that. Yeah. So we want to, you know, we kind of start at the bottom. We've all renounced the painful ones. Let's work on renouncing the pleasant ones, because the pleasant ones, are that's the happiness we experience from four of the eight worldly concerns. The other four of the eight worldly concerns are the painful feelings, okay, which we've already renounced. But the pleasant ones, yeah, we need to give those up. By renounce, I don't mean, you know, like, bleh, you know, but it's just like, this is unsatisfactory. I am not interested in this anymore. I want to put my energy in a different direction. Okay, so let's work on that. And at the same time, let's contemplate the disadvantages of the neutral feelings so we can start preparing ourselves to also relinquish attachment to them. Okay, so in this meditation, when we're establishing mindfulness in our feelings, we want to examine the way in which pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral feelings come about. So what are their causes? You want to, you know, become aware of that. What causes pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, mental, and physical feelings? Then we want to become aware of the characteristics of those feelings. You know, what are they when they're there? Yeah. What does pain feel like? What does pleasure feel like? And then we also want to contemplate the results of these three kinds of feelings. Sometimes it's said six feelings because the three kinds both have mental and physical. Okay, so the six kinds of feelings. So to examine their cause, what makes them arise, their present characteristics or present nature, and their result. Okay, how we react to them. What do the feelings lead to? Okay, so it's quite interesting. When we're looking at the cause of the feelings, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, we have to become aware of three things: the object, the sense faculty, and the consciousness. Because we don't experience any feeling until those three come together in contact. Okay? So we have the physical object, yeah, apple crisp, the the sense faculty. So we have the gustatory sense faculty, you know, with the tongue, yeah. We also have the visual sense faculty, because we see it and that brings pleasure. We can't hear it. We can smell it, so we might smell it. Yeah, that sense faculty is all. So, and then each of these sense faculties, you know, has the potential when it contacts the object to, to make a consciousness arise. So we get the visual consciousness of seeing it, the gustatory consciousness of tasting it, the olfactory consciousness of smelling it. Okay, so it's very interesting to start breaking that down, you know, because we just usually go to the pleasant feeling and I want it. But to go back and like, okay, well, how did this present feeling come about? There's an object, there's a faculty, there's a consciousness. These three have to come together. They have to have contact. And from that contact, then feeling is produced. So the object doesn't have the pleasant feeling in it. We usually think the object has the pleasant feeling in it. That car we want has happiness in it. The apple crisp has pleasant taste in it. Yeah, whatever it is, you know, touching a hot stove has pain in it. Actually, the pain isn't there in the object. because you have the object, the sense faculty, the consciousness come together. There's contact. That generates the feeling. The feeling is a mental experience. The aggregate of feeling is one of the mental aggregates. Yeah? But we think the feeling came from there, but the feeling didn't. The feeling is a conscious experience. Okay? We can see this so clearly when people criticize us. Yeah? When they criticize us, and the words come and they hit our ears, painful feelings arise instantaneously. And we feel that that pain came from that criticism. It's like the person opens their mouth and together with the sound waves, pain comes out. That's the way we look at it, isn't it? You hurt me. We point the finger at them. You hurt me. Yeah? And so the sound and the pain comes out and hits here. That hurt. You know? And then it's your fault. You hurt me. You know, those words have pain in them. And when the same person, maybe a half an hour later or a half an hour previously, says, "You're so wonderful and you're talented and intelligent and artistic and I really love you," same person, it seems like pleasure is coming out of their mouth with those sound waves. Doesn't it? Actually, it's just sound waves in both cases. Just sound waves. No pleasure in the sound waves. No pain in the sound waves. You need the connection of the sound with the ear faculty, generating the consciousness, and then we get the feeling. Okay. And it often may start out just a slightly unpleasant feeling. But then as we repeat what they said to us again and again, now it's going from sense consciousness to mental consciousness, because when we start thinking about what they said to us, we're no longer hearing the sounds. We're stuck in our head. And we start saying, "They said this, they said that, they said this, they said that." Then we get angrier and angry and more upset, and our hurt feelings are increased, and we're in so much pain and we can't stand it. Right? Meanwhile, the other person's left the room. They're nowhere to be seen. Maybe we're even sitting on our meditation cushion, thinking about what they said to us, generating mental pain. And the sound waves aren't there. You know, similarly, when they say, "I love you," and we think the sound waves came, and, you know, now we caught, oh, this blissful feeling. And then we sit down in meditation. "Oh, they said they love me. They said I'm wonderful and I'm talented. I do this well and that well." The person's nowhere to be seen. Yeah, the sound waves have ceased. But there I am with, you know, my memories generating mental pleasure. Yeah, complete daydream, hallucination. Yeah, okay. So at that time, actually, what you're having is the sense faculty, you know, for your mental consciousness are previous moments of let's say hearing, or, you know, your visual consciousness or your visual consciousness, auditory consciousness, you know, previous moments of those become the faculty that give rise to your mental consciousness that's experiencing pleasure or pain, depending upon what you're remembering and what you're thinking about. Okay? So when we're, you know, really doing research on this and investigating in our own experience what causes pain and pleasure, we have to start teasing these things apart and really noticing how they occur in our own experience. Yeah, it's one thing to understand them intellectually and be able to describe the process, but it's another thing to really notice it in our own experience. You know, oh, there were these sound waves. Yeah, generating an connected with my ear organ, generating an auditory consciousness. You know, the sound was a little bit loud, so there was a little bit of physical pain. But then that auditory consciousness is, I'm remembering it, you know, it's acting as the faculty for my mental consciousness. And now I'm repeating their words to myself again and again like a mantra. I can't stand you, you don't do anything right. I can't stand you, you don't do anything right. I can't stand you. You know, that's our mantra as we remember what the other person said to us. Yeah. Then so much painful feeling we're feeling, you know. Person isn't even here. This happened 10 years ago. Yeah. So much painful mental feeling. Then anger arises. Yeah. We're furious. We need to end our meditation session so we can call them on the phone and tell them off. You know, which we're sitting there, and instead of regretting our non-virtuous actions, like Rinpoche's been teaching us, we're regretting that we didn't tell them off 10 years ago when it happened. You know. Should have told them off then I wouldn't be so miserable. Okay. So you see, how all these things of, you know, the object, the faculty, the consciousness coming together, generating a physical feeling, then that generating a mental feeling, then that generating an afflicted state of mind, anger, resentment, something like that. Then we act. We get up and we go call that person, tell them off. Or we write them a nasty email. Or exercise our thumbs by texting them. Okay? So, do you see how that, you know, we have contact, feeling, yeah, physical feeling, mental feeling, affliction, action. What does the karma produce? More pain, doesn't it? Yeah? More pain. Because we're creating negative karma when we're texting somebody a nasty message. So we're creating the cause for more pain. And then after you've sent the message or you've sent the email, then at first you say, oh good, I told them off. Did what I should have done 10 years ago. And then after a little while, then what happens? Ew. Look what I said to that person. How are they going to hear that? How are they going to react to it? Well, we may have already found out because they may have already called us and told us off. Okay. Or we think about what we did and we feel lousy. And we say, oh, you know, I just did the 4 opponent powers, you know, to purify my harsh speech. And I made a determination not to do it again, and here I did it again. Got more to purify. What are those 4 opponent powers again? Okay. So do you see how all these things actually fit together in the flow of what we call our life? All these different teachings come together. Yeah, they're there all the time. Okay, so very interesting to look at this kind of flow, how that happens, and tease it apart and look at it step by step. And then see if you can get some idea how to cut it. Yeah? If you don't have contact with the object, if you don't have contact with that object, you're not going to generate the unpleasant or pleasant feeling. So you're not going to have the attachment or aversion that comes from that. Okay. At least not immediately. Of course, if you're still attached to those things in your mind, all you have to do is think about them and the feeling and the affliction come. Okay. But at least if we keep some distance from an object that we tend to react to quite strongly, it gives us some mental space to start looking at this process. Yeah. And then by dissecting this process, it gives us more information about, you know, how we can cut it. Because, okay, just because I experience pain doesn't mean I need to get angry and upset. Try that for a new thought. Just because I experience pleasure doesn't mean I have to cling to it and want more and better. Those are interesting new thoughts, aren't they? It's not what the advertising industry teaches us. It's not what our parents teach us. Okay? Just because I feel pain, I don't have to get upset and angry. Just because I feel pleasure, I don't have to get attached and craving. Okay? So there's lots more to say about mindfulness of feelings. We'll continue next week. But you might have a couple of questions now. Yeah?
I'm wondering a little bit about the feelings that arise when we're engaged in virtuous activity.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, like, I guess they're still contaminated as long as they're influenced by bad afflictions. But they seem to be like almost, sometimes it seems like a pleasant feeling that arises during when trying to engage in virtue is a sign that I'm actually engaging in virtue or something.
Yeah. Okay, so very often when we're doing something virtuous, we do have a good feeling about it, and we experience pleasure. You know, when you're concentrated in your meditation, there's a pleasant feeling. When you're making offerings and you're imagining all these beautiful, gorgeous things, there's a pleasant feeling in your mind. When you're thinking, when you're visualizing like white Tara, you know, or Manjushri or Chinresi, they're so beautiful, there's this pleasant feeling in your mind. Okay? Now, because we're still beings in cyclic existence, that feeling is contaminated. However, you know, that feeling is not going to lead us to craving and clinging. Okay? It's going to lead us and inspire us to want to practice more. So we don't want to kind of put down those feelings. Yeah, it's fine to experience pleasure, especially pleasure that comes from Dharma practice, because that will really encourage you to have, you know, to do more virtuous activities with your body, speech, and mind, which creates more good karma and brings more happiness to ourselves and to others. Okay? Yeah.
Well, there was I read where this guy wanted to help a woman across the street, this older woman. She thought he was a mugger. She started screaming. So he had a bad reaction for a good intention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And get in trouble sometimes.
Yeah.
Do good deeds.
Yeah, which it shows that the feeling doesn't exist in the object.
Yes.
But she completely misinterpreted it and had the wrong feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder if maybe it's not for tonight or maybe next time, but the disadvantages to the neutral feelings, will we go through those?
Yeah, I mean, basically the disadvantage of the neutral feelings is that they're produced under the influence of ignorance and karma and afflictions. So thus they give rise to us craving, you know, not to be separated from those neutral feelings. When you're in those blissful states with neutral feelings in the upper realms, you don't want to be separated from that. So that makes you lazy to go back and, you know, start to learn about emptiness and do the analysis to see how things actually exist and all. Because that feeling of, oh, this neutral feeling is just so good. Yeah, I don't want to give that up. So you generate the craving for renewed existence in samsara.
But in that neutral state, yeah. That's what you're craving.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Question now. So you go from the sense consciousness to the mental consciousness, which decides it is pain, pleasure, or neutral?
No, your sense consciousness has pain, pleasure, and neutral itself, you know. But then that when your mental consciousness kind of recalls that experience, then you're getting a mental feeling. Okay?
So the sense consciousness makes the determination pleasurable, painful?
It's not making a determination, it's just the experience. Yeah, we don't think I'm experiencing suffering and then we experience suffering. There's just the sensation. And then we take it from there and we extrapolate and proliferate. Okay. Yeah?
Is it possible for those sense experiences and mental experiences to conflict?
Possible for sense experience. So to be experiencing physical pain and at the same time mental happiness?
I'm thinking people who are conditioned to enjoy their misery.
So people who are conditioned to enjoy their misery. Actually, I think they're still experiencing mental pain and as well as the physical pain. The one exception I can think about is if you have a bodhisattva who might have broken their leg or been experiencing some physical pain, but they're doing the taking and giving meditation, and so because of that, mentally, they're experiencing a pleasant feeling. This will be the last question.
I was wondering if sometimes when you pay attention, turn your mind to attending to the feeling that you find that you can't keep it there.
Yeah, it's very interesting. When you turn your mind to just paying attention to the feeling, it's very difficult to keep your mind just on the feeling. We immediately start making up stories and reacting to the feeling. And see, this is where mindfulness of feelings becomes really important, because you keep your attention just on the feeling. And when you do that, that's a point where you can cut the reactivity. Okay. And that gets very interesting when you try and keep your attention just on the feeling, because it is difficult. Because then you start thinking, well, why do I think this is a painful feeling? Why do I think this is a pleasant feeling? Yeah? And then you have to investigate what they are a little bit more. Okay, so there's lots to meditate on here. Yeah, nice that a 3-month retreat's coming up. Some of you might want to join the retreat from afar, doing one session a day with us. If you do, please give us a picture. We'll put it in the meditation hall so that you'll be part of the Abbey community retreat during the 3 months.
May the spiritual teachers who lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual masters be stable, and their divine actions spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Losang's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the 3 worlds always increase. Guru Ratna Mandala Kamiriyatayami.
due to this merit may we soon attain the enlightened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain paradise, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful Tenzin Gyatso Chenrezig, may you stay until samsara ends. May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the ten directions, and especially at Shravasti Abbey in the west floor.